Hey, welcome to What's the Tea, the TransLink podcast. I'm your host, John Jang. Here's what we're checking out on this episode. Every day I get in the queue. Bus, bus. To get on the bus that takes me to you. Bus. How exactly are bus routes actually made? Let's tap in to What's the Tea.
The next station is...
Welcome to What's the Tea, the TransLink podcast.
So here's a little something about me that you probably don't know, but I grew up basically everywhere around the Lower Mainland. And even though I was born in South Korea, my family immigrated to Canada when I was young, and our first home here was in Port Moody. And that's where I rode the bus for the very first time. I must have been 6 or 7. But my sister and I, with our babysitter, we took the bus to visit the old Lougheed Town Center, and this was around 1996 or 97, so it was a very different experience back then. But my family would eventually move out to Cloverdale in Surrey, where I spent the bulk of my childhood. And as I got a little bit older into my teens, my friends and I slowly began exploring more and more outside of the suburbs and, you know, just naturally wanting to visit more places like downtown Vancouver. And so the bus, and specifically the 502 from Willowbrook Mall to Surrey Central, that bus was our gateway to the big city. And to explain why, you would have to just look at a map. Willowbrook Mall, for those that don't know, is in Langley, and it's just off the corner of Fraser Highway and the Langley Bypass. There's no SkyTrain station around, at least not yet, and because we were too young to have a driver's license or a car, if my friends and I wanted to get downtown, we needed to get to the SkyTrain. And so, the 502, which runs along Fraser Highway between Surrey Central to downtown Langley, that bus was our ticket to the great beyond, because once you got on the SkyTrain, it felt like the entire world was at your fingertips. Now, this little story is more than just a fun little anecdote from me. It's a snapshot into how planners map out bus routes. Think about it. There are so many streets and roads and avenues, drives and boulevards in Metro Vancouver. Bus routes can't possibly be served on every single street, so they need to find a balance between serving the greater community and still maintaining some level of efficiency. Bus routes can't be too long, otherwise you're tying up too many valuable resources. And bus routes can't be too complex. They shouldn't be taking so many twists and turns, otherwise that trip could end up taking ages. Quite simply, bus routes just need to work. And to explain that process and how they're made and expertly crafted, we are now joined by Michelle Babiuk, Senior Manager of Transit Planning at TransLink.
So what we do is take TransLink's long-range regional strategic transportation plan, so Transport 2050, and support the organization in breaking that down into more concrete and then fundable plans and leading them through implementation. So we worked on Access for Everyone, our 10-year plan, and then we lead development of the transit service portions of our investment plans and lead those into annual plans and through implementation. And we do that for all of our conventional transit modes. So bus, SkyTrain, commuter rail, West Coast Express, and passenger ferry, C-Bus, as well as for custom transit service, which Handy Dart is a large portion.
Needless to say, I think that's probably one of the coolest, but probably also one of the most demanding jobs inside TransLink, because what you do essentially is design ways to move thousands and thousands of people across the region every day. I'm curious, like what inspired you to want to become a planner for transit?
Absolutely. So my undergrad degree is in English literature. And as I got close to the end, I thought about what do I like doing and what do I not like doing? And I realized one of the things I do not like doing is writing. And I thought, what do I enjoy? And I thought playing SimCity, being a busybody at community meetings, and my bike commute. So I was also doing some cycling advocacy at the time. Because when you're spending an hour biking every day, you have a lot of time to think about how your bike commute could be better.
Right.
Yeah, so I went back for a master's in planning degree at UBC, and I took the bus there every day. Mm. And I thought a lot about how my bus commute could be better.
Mm, okay.
So when I graduated 17 years ago, I came to TransLink and worked in the bike planning program. And then I got a job working on designs for passenger infrastructure, so bus exchanges and SkyTrain stations. And part of that work involved working very closely with the service planning teams and with the operations teams, because those are going to be the end users of the facilities in addition to customers. And when a job came up on the service planning team, I applied for it because I found it really interesting.
Yeah.
Like, it's a system. There's like new things to think about every day, and I really fell in love with it.
I think that's a great story. And the fact that you played SimCity too is actually so relatable to me. Growing up, I'm sure like many others who were like a 90s kid, you might have had a computer at home, but maybe no internet. For a little while, that was what my childhood was like. But I had SimCity, so I played a lot of SimCity. And you know, when you think about SimCity and you do the reflecting, sure, it's about building buildings and like communities. But so much of that is, and maybe people don't realize it, but so much of it is building very efficient roadways and you know, good transportation networks. So I find that all super, super fascinating. If you go to the TransLink website, as an example, when we're talking about bus routes, my bio for the website says that my favorite route growing up was the 502. Mm-hmm. I'm a Cloverdale kid. So when you're younger and you don't have your driver's license and you don't have a car, you got to use the bus to get around. And for me to get to Guildford Mall with friends, to go to the shopping center or maybe just check out the food court, or even to just get downtown, the 502 picks you up at Willowbrook Mall, goes along Fraser Highway, drops you right off at Surrey Central, and you can go wherever you want to go. Like, it unlocks the world for you. That was my love experience, having a route that I could depend on when I was young. What was your favorite bus route? If you maybe growing up started taking transit more, and you know, is there maybe like a anecdote that you can share about something like that? Or is it a bike route, perhaps?
I mean, it's a great question. I actually grew up within walking distance of 22nd Street SkyTrain station.
Okay,
we took the SkyTrain to Metrotown.
Yeah,
down all the places you go as a teenager.
Fair.
In Metro Vancouver. And my local bus route was the 128.
Okay.
But I never took it. My parents made me walk to school.
Fair enough, yeah.
but it does make me think about something you think about more as you spend more time in the planning profession. Like, I joke a bit about playing SimCity when you're a child.
Yeah.
And there it's a very technical exercise, and you have a lot of maybe dictatorship role over the system. And I think the longer you're in practice, the more you think about the people that are using the system and the importance, like, both to communities and individuals. So I didn't use the 128 growing up that much, but I saw as my parents aged and my dad lost a lot of his mobility, and handy dirt was an appropriate solution for him. Him and my mom started using the transit system quite a bit more than they had done during their working lives. And it was really transformative to watch, like, what a change that made for them and their freedom and their independence.
Well, I think that's such a very succinct point, is that, you know, buses, SkyTrain, West Coast Express, C-Bus, and especially HandyDart, these services put us all on, like, equal footing in a lot of ways. Because you can be a student, you can be an elderly, you know, you can be a senior, you can be someone who's trying to get to work at a professional corporate job, you could be on your way to a medical appointment, no matter what. It's supposed to get you from point A to point B. And so thank you for sharing that, because I think this is true and it's a real life experience for so many families across Metro Vancouver. So I'm glad we were able to highlight that point.
And I don't drive.
Okay.
So I do take the bus every single week.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. And I think that's such a great point to bring up as well, because in Metro Vancouver, there's lots of people who decide, like, I just don't need the stress of having to pay the car and the auto insurance and parking. I'm just going to depend on public transit to get around. So when it comes to designing bus routes, what makes a perfect bus route. Is there such a thing as a perfect bus route? And does TransLink have a perfect bus route?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for asking. I think that there can be the best bus route for a community. So when you're thinking about designing a bus route, there are certain principles, but I think the most important one, both when you're looking at an individual route and the network that it sits within, is what are your community's priorities and objectives? So how important is it to provide high mobility to people in your community, to move people quickly, to provide high quality service to key destinations versus providing like a basic level of access to a larger number of people? Do you have objectives around serving certain subpopulations? So, for example, is ensuring that seniors can get around your community or people accessing certain destinations like critical medical appointments. What are all these priorities for you? And understanding your priorities is going to help shape how you design a route and the network. And that being said, like all things being equal, typically, this is disappointing, I think, the best bus routes are usually the most boring looking routes because, I mean, think about it. You're here and you want to go here, and most people don't want to go on a scenic tour of the whole city.
Fair.
They want to go from A to B as quickly and directly as possible.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, beautiful is boring. This is the moral of the story here. But it's absolutely true because, you know, if you're on a tour bus, of course, you want to go and see everything. You want to make sure your whole day is jam-packed of all the sightseeing. But when you're on a commuter bus, a typical bus, you just want to get there as fast as you can. You don't want there to be any delays. You want to make sure it's as efficient as possible. Our system is multimodal, so it kind of feeds into certain destinations, to your point. I would assume those are like big transit hubs or SkyTrain stations, right? So how much of that is kind of fun for you because you have the challenge of trying to connect buses into SkyTrain, into West Coast Express, into C-Bus, and making sure everyone has equitable access to everything?
Yeah, and I think we and other teams at TransLink are constantly looking at the network and making adjustments because something else is that communities are changing. New neighborhoods are growing up. Certain destinations might become less important over time as well as more important. And even if the built environment, like that fabric of your city, doesn't change at all and no one moves in or out, the people living in that community are still going to age. Wow. Like time goes on for all of us. So there is no community that's ever static. So the transit network needs to keep adjusting to meet people's changing needs.
Would you say that things like our quarterly service changes, the seasonal service changes, we do this recognizing that as the calendar rolls on, all of a sudden, transit patterns have to change. In the summer, people tend to go away. School isn't in session for most people. So we sort of adjust, I'm assuming. Is there any other explanation as to why we do those quarterly changes?
Yeah, so I think people see the quarterly changes, you know, on TransLink's website that they navigate to, or they see them on the ground in their communities. And in some ways, those changes are nimble. They're responding to things we're seeing out on the system day to day, but a lot of that is actually planned far in advance and work is ongoing and consultation is ongoing. And the quarterly plan, when you see it on the ground, is just the last step in that process. So there are two things you typically see in a quarterly plan. So one is permanent service changes. So those could be expansion projects that are detailed and funded in our investment plans. So those investment plans are translated to annual plans and then broken into quarterly plans. A second piece might be reallocation. So working with our existing funding envelope to move service to where customers need it the most. And the third thing you're speaking to is seasonal changes. So things that happen on a temporary basis every year. So, for example, more service to parks and beaches and outdoor destinations in the summer, and in some cases more service at other times of the year to, for example, post-secondary institutions that are not as busy in the summer and busier in the fall.
You're listening to What's the Tea, the TransLink podcast, and we'll be right back.
We've become all too familiar with problems. it's time we're introduced to some solutions. The Transit-Friendly Employer Certification exists to support and promote transit use, one of the easiest, most effective actions we can take to address climate action and livability. Organizations that provide a 50% transit subsidy will receive this certification. The time to act is now. Become a transit-friendly employer today.
Welcome back to What's the Tea, the TransLink podcast, in conversation with Michelle Babiak, Senior Manager of Transit Planning at TransLink. And since we're talking about how bus routes are made, I should mention that creating new bus routes can happen as a result of building efficiencies. As an example, as part of our bus stop balancing program, our planners at TransLink were able to identify opportunities to save resources and money. We then pooled all of that together and created a brand new route, Route 80, in spring of 2023. Michelle, I have to imagine that when things like this happen, it's almost like finding free money because everyone wins.
I mean, it was exciting for us because we were working in very constrained circumstances coming out of COVID, constrained funding envelope, constrained resources. And our bus stop balancing team was doing some work to, come to the right number and spacing of buses on some of the other routes in the city of Vancouver. Over time, stops had grown very close together, which was making trip times slow for customers taking the service. So inconvenient for them and also very resource intensive to run the service because trip times were getting longer and longer. So you're using resources every minute that you're on the road. So we were able to take those savings, which sound like they might be small, just removing some stops on a route, but they were so substantial, we were able to reinvest them in launching the Route 80, which is a route serving the River District in Southeast Vancouver, quite a medium to high density, primarily residential community.
And a community that didn't exist that long ago, and so now it's quite new, and we had to adjust to that, right?
So. Yeah, that's right. So this service allows people in the River District to travel to a number of destinations along Marine Drive, also connect to north-south bus services, so feeding into a real network there, and then also connect people to the Canada Line. And it was exciting. I was able to be there for the first trip.
The inaugural route
with some of my colleagues from the my planning team and the engineering division and from City of Vancouver. And I caught the first number 9 of the day to the Canada Line to catch that early morning service. And we saw both some other colleagues who also wanted to check out the route. But also, people were actually using the route for transportation and had clearly been waiting for that. Like, they really needed that service in their lives because they were right there at 6 a.m. to board the first trip.
Love it. I think that's the truth. We have to peel the curtain back a little bit, is that when we have things to announce, like the brand new route, it's exciting to us because it's like the fruits of all the labor that you had to put into this to try and track down the resources, try and plan out which route it's going to be feeding into, to your point about going north-south on other bus routes that have already been pre-established. Like, there's a lot of work that goes into making sure that this is happening. Of course you want to celebrate. Of course it's exciting. So I think it's good that people know that we're all humans and this is kind of like a, not that we're like drinking, but like a champagne bottle popping moment, right? Where you and your team get to say, look, we made this. Like, this is something that we did and look at everyone that's enjoying it now.
I mean, that was really exciting. And the other thing is, like, I think about the system as a regional network and knowing that the system is always changing, the city is always changing, we're always changing. Like, the 80 isn't part of my commute today, but maybe I will live somewhere different in the future. Maybe I will make a friend that lives somewhere different or, you know, take up a new hobby that involves traveling somewhere different in the region. So I think about, the service right around me that I'm using today, but also all the opportunity that services in different places open up for us to travel.
Someone's going to hear the things you have to say and feel inspired the same way that when you were, younger and all those experiences that you had shared, you were inspired to realize that maybe you don't love writing, but you sure do love riding. That's so cheesy. I was trying to think of a way to make this work. But, you know, it inspired you to make this career choice, and now here you are. What are some words of advice you would have for someone who's seriously interested and invested and wants to be a part of the solution in helping this transit system grow and stay nimble in the future? What are some of the advices that you'd have for them?
Right. Well, I think for people in general, there are so many ways to be involved, by sending us feedback, by participating in consultations, by getting involved in different ways in your communities, like through your residents association, through your citizens advisory councils for your local government. This is one piece of democracy, and it's not just people sitting in an office making it happen. Like, we all need to engage in our community in that way. For people thinking about having a profession in transit or transportation, one piece of advice I would give is be open-minded about what you might be able to do and what might be interesting to you. So I think transportation planning is thought of as one of the more technical or quantitative fields in the planning profession. And I think that can be true, but also it's really about people, with working with stakeholders, with working with your colleagues, working with elected officials. So it's quite broad. And then there are so many other aspects of the profession as well. So having an English degree, I never imagined that, you know, a year out of school, I would be a project manager for designing an infrastructure project. And I was absolutely able to do that and also wanted to do it. Yeah. Like, it turned out to be about working with people, about urban design, as well as about transportation. And seeing, like, lots of women that are very successful in our profession. But I think sometimes the stereotype of it being very quantitative can sound make it sound less interesting to other people, or less about values, or less about the community. And it's not. It's equal to other aspects of planning. And it's really interesting. And you never know what you might be interested in. I've done so many different things in my career, and I never would have thought they would have been the right thing for me, but they were all great experiences.
Michelle, thank you so much for giving us some time here today. And if, I don't know, if there's one thing I've learned from this, it's that the best, most beautiful bus routes are boring. So let that be the key component and takeaway, and realize why that is. Michelle, thanks so much for this.
Thank you.
Boring is beautiful. And yet the truth is, transit planning is anything but boring. It's almost organic in nature, the way planners receive and interpret data, and then make adjustments when and where necessary. As communities grow and change, transit service needs to be flexible, and planners have to adapt. It's like a silent and invisible dance between causation and effect. And when you consider just how many bus routes or transit hubs there are across Metro Vancouver, it's actually incredible to think about. Boring may be beautiful, but so is this intricate give and take of logistics and data. My thanks to Michelle Babiuk and the entire transit planning team. They do such great and important work behind the scenes, making sure our transit system runs as smoothly as possible. My thanks to producers Alan and Sydney for always mapping out this podcast expertly and efficiently. And of course, my thanks to you for listening and subscribing. I've been your host, John Jang, and until next time, have a safe trip.
It's time for another TransLink etiquette moment. Things you should and should not do while taking transit.
Etiquette tip number 33. Don't be a blocking bunny. Give your fellow transit riders a clear path to disembark the bus or SkyTrain. Don't block those doors or aisles. It'll just make things harder for everyone.
Visit translink.ca/etiquette for more.